Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. If you're a business person, if you are fascinated with advertising, marketing, if you are a person that wants to know about it, well, my guest today, Neil Martin, is a man whose material habit, the 95% of behavior marketers ignore, will be absolutely significant to you. Neil, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna.
Now, you're the founder and CEO of Natelic, Inc., a marketing consulting and education company. You work with various companies to help them figure out how they can market themselves in a strategic manner, because today we face some very significant challenges with the technology that we have and instant information that's going out. Now, you've been doing this since 1995. It's very important to you that marketing be updated. You decided, after being a hospital administrator for a number of years, being involved also with being a counselor and a program director for alcohol and drug addiction, you decided you were going to get a PhD in marketing from the College of Management. And the Georgia Institute of Technology is where that was located. But you didn't buy into the whole thing. I mean, after all, you get a PhD in marketing, you'd think all the T's were crossed, all the I's were dotted. How come you didn't buy into the typical?
Well, I think that the checkered nature of my career actually helped give me a much different perspective than people who probably more of a traditional, you know, business degree, MBA, PhD, type of program. And because I was in the real world for several years and had an opportunity to work with people in a variety of different settings, that I didn't come in with the kind of preconceived belief system that I think a lot of people who get very well versed in the marketing theory, the way they approach problems. And I think that the other part of that was that because I had an extensive background in psychology, I've always been very interested in how the brain works. And so when I started doing research into this particular area about the influence of habits, I was very comfortable getting in and reading books by neuroscientists and by cognitive psychologists and social psychologists. And I wasn't as convinced that the marketing theory that we had in place was necessarily, sacrosanct or inherently, couldn't be questioned. And I think that the big thing was that when a lot of the marketing theory was created, was really back in the 1960s. And I had the privilege of working with some of the people who had done a lot of the original work that led to our theories of buyer behavior and theories about customer satisfaction and the things that are taught in most business schools. And I have a lot of respect for the work they did, but I realized that their underlying assumptions that they had really been radically revised by the work that's been done in the last 15 years by people in the brain sciences.
You say that marketing has a bunch of sacred cows, and I think just about every area of enterprise has their sacred cows. And so often they become inert, and the wheel of confusion keeps spinning and turning, and people keep throwing money in saying, gee, if I do this, it's going to work. Gee, if I do this, it's going to work. After all, it worked for so-and-so. Advertising and marketing is extremely important because if people don't know about you, your service, your product, etc., nothing's going to happen. I mean, it's word of mouth is a good thing. However, that word of mouth may take years to really get around.
Well,
the fact in your book about how we are so much on autopilot, And yeah, I liked your analogy of the driving and how we'll go from point A to point B and don't even remember. We could have driven 150 miles and we could no more tell you what we passed than a man on the moon, because our mind is in another segment of thought. Habit is something we all have, and it's very difficult for people to change those habits. Some of those habits are established in the past. Sometimes we make new ones. What do you have to say about the executive mind and the habitual mind?
Well, you actually bring up a lot of really good points. I mean, the big thing about this, and I think that what we've been able to really determine about the way our brain works is that we've developed over time these two different systems. And we have what I call the executive mind, which is the part that's really very much about self-awareness. It's the, you know, it's the prefrontal cortex. It's the cerebrum, the kind of the outside of your brain that is the youngest part of our brain. And that's the amazing part we think of in terms of being able to solve problems and to remember facts on purpose and to, you know, kind of remember narratives. And it gives us our sense of identity and art and culture and literature. But the older part of the mind, of the brain, which is the habitual mind, really has been around for millions of years and is really, really, really good at what it does. And I think we have a tendency to underestimate the role and our dependence on the unconscious processes that really steer us through the day. The title of the book, Habit, the 95% of Behavior That Marketers Ignore, you know, comes from some of this brain research that really indicates that as much as 95% of what we do day to day, we're not really thinking about it when we do it. And that seems so contrary to our perception of the world. We think that we are consciously making these choices. So, you know, we're talking about the idea of the sacred cows in marketing. So in market research, if I go up and I ask you, why did you buy that? You know, why did you come here for dinner? Why did you go see that movie? There's going to be an assumption on your part, simply because the executive brain has just been engaged, that it was responsible for that decision. And it's going to go through and it's going to come up with what seems to be a plausible reason why you shop at this store versus the other store. But the reality might be something which you might have had a reason for several years ago when you originally made that decision, but that has nothing to do with why you did that this time, which is because you had automated that process. And that decision might have been from something as trivial as this store was a right-hand turn and the other store would have to be a left-hand turn across traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And that you had you know, created that reason simply because of something that you were maybe peripherally aware of, and then you had repeated it so many times that you weren't thinking about it anymore. You know, you also mentioned the whole idea about, you know, I'm a big fan of marketing. I'm a great believer in marketing, and it's not that, you know, when I talk about the idea of really kind of going after the sacred cows, it's much more along the lines of we just need to update a large part of our principles based on this new research that really shows the way customers are really working. And it's so counterintuitive because we think we want our customers to love us. And what I'm saying is almost the exact opposite. I want my customer not to think about me. I want my customer to repeat buy from me unconsciously. Because if they're thinking about me, there's a real good chance that they're going to be thinking about my competitors as well. And so it's this idea of trying to get people to automate on your brand that is so critical.
I think that is where the term loyalty comes in, where, and maybe I'm, and you can correct me on this, but I think that is really where loyalty becomes hardwired in a way, unless you really do something stinking, and that's my word. I think of a situation that I had with a major department store, and I won't mention the name. This is just recently. This is a company I've dealt with for many, 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 many years. It has been one I've respected, and they have gone into doing computerized answering for service needs. And by the time you got through with the computerized system, you were ready to just, you know, tear the computer out of the wall because it took you longer to talk to the cotton picking routine that you had to push button 2, button 3, all this stuff. And when I talked to the people in the service department, then what they said was, sorry, it's out of our hands. This is something the company has decided to do. I said, where is the personal interaction? And that's something that so many businesses that have taken stuff offshore, they are totally out of the loop. You address that regarding wireless companies and how they really don't care whether you stay with them or not until all of a sudden reach a point to go, oops, we're losing customers right and left. I know banks that have gone through this. What is it that it's going to take to get these people to wake up and realize customer service is a part of the marketing situation?
Well, Don, I mean, it's a great point, and it's a very important point. One of the biggest problems that companies face in terms of customer service is they treat it, you know, we can look at any aspect of our business as either a profit center or a cost center. So if something's a profit center, I invest in it because the idea is that it's going to make me money. If something is thought of as a cost center and I'm managing something which is in a cost, you know, that's been designated a cost center, then all of my bonuses are based on how do I drive the cost down for managing that. And for years, most companies have viewed customer service as a cost center. How do I drive down my costs in interacting with my customers? And this is one of the things that leads to these types of decisions. You know, you can put in a front-end system that improves the experience of the customer by getting you to the right person, getting you to billing if it's a billing issue, getting you to technical support if it's a technical support issue. But when you are really putting systems in place not to improve the customer interaction, but to drive down your cost, because you know, a customer call can cost, you know, $8, $15, $20 pretty easily in terms of the full cost of that call. And so if I'm thinking about this in terms of a call center and I drive those costs down, even if it means I lose customers, that doesn't matter to me because that's a different part of the business. That's not where my bonus is coming from. My bonus is coming from driving these costs down. And this is the one of the things that we get into in the book is the idea that so many times the executive brain makes decisions that are really impacting our habitual brains, you know, automated decisions. And so, you know, if I create this organizational chart and I break customer service out away from all these other types of things that I'm doing to, you know, create products and services, then I end up making these kinds of mistakes because, you know, the whole can't see what's happening, you know, based on these individual parts doing these independent decisions. And that's one of the things that I really try to get across, that when you understand that you're trying to create habit-based loyalty, then you recognize that you have to go in and look at everything that you're doing to see if you are going to inadvertently take somebody out of an automatic rebuy situation and put that decision back into conscious awareness. And if it's in conscious awareness, then just like you're experiencing right now where you didn't have a problem with the store, you didn't have a problem with their pricing, you didn't have a problem with their merchandise, but because they've done this thing in their customer service area, now you are actually rethinking whether or not you want to shop at that store.
And the answer, the response to that would be, I'm going to go everywhere else before going to that store again.
Right. And the other thing that you mentioned, which is really important for people to understand, is that the world has changed dramatically because consumers have been empowered in ways that were unimaginable just a few years ago. Because not only can I go online to get information about stores, I can go online and publish information about my experiences with stores or with products or with services.
Mm-hmm.
And now a bad customer experience, you can create customers who, instead of being loyal, are actively, proactively out there trying to hurt you. They're trying to damage your reputation because they have become so mad at something that's occurred.
Mm-hmm. And that's true.
And that's one of the things that I think that really gets into this point about understanding that so many times that situation has occurred, not because of the original problem, but because of the way that problem was handled subsequently.
And I think that is a big issue with many, many businesses. In fact, lots of times people will say, I don't want to waste my time going through this process, or, you know, various things. And that's another thing, too, because we are, I think of our generation today, we are so used to having things done quickly and rapidly, and not everything can be done quickly and rapidly. But that little component of personalized conversation with someone, explanation, giving them that could make tens of thousands of dollars for someone, maybe even millions of dollars, instead of doing some other things. But what you also go into is the fact that we're of two minds, you know, the conscious and the subconscious, and you give some information that the Duke researchers showed that we do the same thing at the same time every day, 45% of the time, when we're thinking about something else. And I think just about every female in the world would go, I agree. You know, when you have your kids and you're doing things, you need a routine. You need to be able to do things in a routine basis because you've got to keep your sensory system alert and operating. And I'm referring especially to women who are mothers. And this is just something we do. And I thought, that's a pretty good point of information. Now, you talked about one case that I found absolutely fascinating. And that was about in 2002, BMW rolled out a brand new car. Why did it fail?
Well, the car didn't, it's really important to understand, I mean, the car didn't fail, but there was a component to the car, and this is their flagship car, their 7 Series BMW, and it was really interesting because the car was brought out amidst, you know, it was their remodel. They really had retooled and had a very different radical look that was very controversial at the time. And I make the point in the book that, you know, that we've gotten used to that look, and it's now in the 5 Series, and it's now in several other the BMW models, as well as in a lot of, you can see the same kinds of lines in some of the Japanese and some of the Korean cars. But the thing that they had done that was really the most problematic was they had introduced a new UI, a new user interface called the iDrive. And they were trying to simplify the cockpit because we had been getting so many more buttons and knobs as we increased the amount of tasks we're trying to do inside the car. So you have navigation systems, maybe DVD players, entertainment systems. And so they had created what they thought was this device that was going to really simplify this process. And I use this example because, in large part, because BMW is such a good company and does such a good job of creating incredibly loyal customers. And you know, I mentioned in the book that my first experience with this car was seeing somebody you know, park it and get out of it in a grocery store parking lot, and I asked him what he thought of it, and his very, you know, pithy reply was, "Want it?" And you know, when I followed up with him on that, it was just because of his frustration with this device that was clearly required the conscious mind to interact with it when you're primarily using your unconscious mind to drive the car. You're not thinking about how much energy to put onto the steering wheel. I mean, you remember the first time you drove a car, you remember how bad you were at steering and mm-hmm. about accelerating and braking. Well, that's because your conscious brain's trying to do it. But when you get some feedback to your unconscious part of your brain, then you learn. That's when the learning really takes place. I mean, you can read a manual, you can read a book, you can sit in class, you can watch movies about how to drive a car, ride a bike, whatever, but not until you actually are doing it do you train your brain to do that. Well, the iDrive was so complicated because, you know, this wheel that was on the console had accessed 8 different sets of menus and submenus. So you can imagine driving down the car, you know, driving down the road at 70 miles per hour and trying to access a menu to change the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't on a preset, then that would require maybe 3 or 4 or 5 steps. And so this was to me just a great example of, I mean, you know, world class company that hired world class people that created this kludge that was so frustrating for the user. And the reason why I like the example is because, you know, any company can do this. Any company can come out with something that intellectually looks like it's good, but practically is horrible.
Oh, that has happened so many, many times. you make a statement, and this is just complementary to what you're talking about. You often have people that are like engineers, and they're looking at, again, what it would be the optimum. And their imaginations go crazy. They try to, they really don't get into the world of practicality. I often wonder why they don't have something like the movie industry does, you know, a test run to see what the response is.
Well, you know, it's fascinating that you say that, because I mean, a lot of times they do. But if I give, but this gets into this whole problem of trying to access what's going on with the unconscious mind. Because if I were to give you something, some software to test, if I were to give you a device to test and say, okay, tell me what you like about this, tell me what you don't like about this, you automatically are approaching this in a very artificial way. You're going to come up with stuff that you would never, ever in a million years actually do with a device and think about this being a problem or this being, you know, something that you would add to it, because you're using your executive mind, and your executive mind is amazing in its ability to think through and think about all different types of possibilities. But when it really comes down to it, it's, and you think about this, like how many people out there have, you know, smartphones, you know, RIM Blackberries or, you know, iPhones or whatever, that may have, you know, 30 or 40 different applications on them. And I've been doing this for years, and I go up to people and I say, how many of these applications do you actually use? And on average, it's two or three. And, you know, why then do they load them down with all of this stuff? And I think that in large part it comes out of that process of, well, you know, they may want to do this with it. They may want to do that with it. You know, there's one, and if I leave that off, then I'm afraid that I may, you know, lose some customer who may want to do this really, you know, kind of obscure thing. And that's where the problem comes in, because then I've made a device that's so complicated that I don't use it anywhere near as fully as I might have if it had maybe five or six things on it that I would really do every day if I could get to those things easily.
Now, relative to this, you have just assisted, I believe it's Samsung, with a new product. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, that's the new Instinct that's coming out from Sprint and Samsung. And it was really interesting because they approached me right at the time as I was in the thick of writing the book. So it was a great real-world opportunity to test out these ideas, and I have just been absolutely delighted with the result, because you know the Instinct has really received great reviews. It won the at the big CPIA wireless event earlier in the year. It was won the best new phone, best new product, and has really done well. It just went on sale last Friday. And I've been trialing one for about a month now, and what tickles me about this more than anything else is that there are so many things that the people at Sprint, and Sprint was very much took the lead in designing the user interface part of this, that there are so many things that I had said, you know, I wanted to do this kind of, you know, it's really important that we start thinking about how people, you know, want to be able to think about whatever it is they're thinking about and then be able to automatically just use the device to make that happen. You know, the example I give in the book is if I give a remote control to my wife, her normal thing is to just punch me, because it forces her, the remote, you know, we have, I don't know, half dozen remote controls in the living room, and she has to think through each one and think through each step. Whereas, you know, being the guy with the degree from a technical university, you know, Georgia Tech, I pick up the remote with that recessive gene thing that I just know exactly what everything does. And the thing that was so neat about designing this phone was that as I was explaining these ideas to the team that was responsible for coming up with the user interface, they got it. And it wasn't like, you know, I was telling them what to do. It was like I was telling them about this idea and about how it worked, and they got it. And they would bring this stuff and make this stuff work in such a way that was so intuitive. And the big thing that I kind of try to get people to understand is that almost everything that's about this phone that you would want to do, you can do with one hand. You know, you don't have to, you know, and that's the part that I really felt like the team just did such a great job, and Samsung did such a great job with taking these ideas and making this thing that, I mean, for me, if I want to, you know, and the way I look at it in terms of the habit thing is that I started, like, if I want to know what movies are out or where movies are playing, I can do it much faster on the instinct than I can if I did it the normal way of going to my computer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I think the tremendous amount of gratification of when people understand this idea, when they get it, it really changes the way they approach their problems. You know, whether the challenges at product design, customer loyalty, advertising, segmentation, it's just so applicable as soon as you start thinking through this idea that a large part of what your customers are doing, they want to do unconsciously. They don't want to have to think about the company that they're using.
Well, you bring up a good point there. I think of Microsoft and how just about on every single computer around you have Microsoft Word. And I was just the other day talking with someone, and Vista is the new one that has come out, and I have yet to meet anyone that has said, gee, this is something a must-have. You're just going to be tickled to death with it. They are all just pulling their hair out. That just drives them crazy. So they tell me, gee, if you have this program, don't leave the one you've got, because if you go into this one, you're going to have nightmares. Now, I'm sure I have listeners that say, gee, I work with this, and it's fine. But that's a case where someone has, or actually teams of people, have put together something that has so dramatically changed. You have a whole new learning curve. And when people do have certain habits, to make a dramatic change like that, it can create such havoc, and you'll get such a tremendous abundance of complaints. It really is, it's not that good.
Well, Donna, I would say that the Vista experience is a perfect example of what happens when we don't understand this distinction between the executive and the habitual mind. That when I'm using the machine, you know, I want my mind to be able to focus on my task.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want my mind to have to focus on the machine. And what Vista does is forces you to routinely come back and deal consciously with something you don't want to have to think about. And that's what creates the frustration. So trying to make it more secure, it forces you to, you know, say okay when you're opening an application. It forces you to say okay when you're doing so many different things. And the other part of it that was very frustrating for users was that the habits that I had in XP, I had to relearn. I had to invest a tremendous amount of energy to undo those very strong, you know, neural circuit automatic things that I had laid down from years of working with this product. And so rather than Microsoft extending my habitual behavior, they actually forced me to break my habits and relearn it. And that's what, you know, the foundation of the book would say, that's the exact opposite of what you want your customers to be able to, you know, to have to do, is to get them to have to, you know, stop doing things the way they were doing them automatically and to relearn them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're really, I think, damaging the equity that you had as a brand, as a company.
Well, I can tell you, I am aware of corporations that when they decide they have to go through a software adjustment, one of the biggest things or a change into different software for their accounting systems, whatever is all involved, especially manufacturing, it is a nightmare. It will take them a year, maybe 2 years, to look at a grouping of products, different suppliers, and they sit there and they just absolutely become totally confused because they say, well, I'm going to have to train my accounting department, I'm going to have to do this, I'm going to have to do that, I'm going to have to do the other. And even when teams come in, they do not understand necessarily, unless they take the time, what specific problems that company may deal with, what their real needs are. It's a fascinating, fascinating area, and I think your perception about habits, how habits can be a double-edged sword, the thinking process to make things user-friendly, how you bring your product brand identity out, how you deal with sales promotion, publicity, all of this you cover in your book. And it's a different paradigm of thought, and I think it is a very healthy paradigm to consider. And Neil, your book is so good. What is your website that people can go to?
My website is neilmartin.com, and if you go there right now, you'll get kind of the old one, and it's being redone to really reflect the book. The trick is that Neil is spelled N-E-A-L-E, so it's N-E-A-L-E, martin.com. And the book will be coming out in early July. It's available for pre-order on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's fairly easy to order ahead of time, and I think it should be in bookstores by July 11th.
Well, I think you have brought out something that is going to be used by many, many people, and it gives one the opportunity to move ahead in a different thought patterning that can be very comfortable and easy to work with. Neil Martin, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, Donna, thank you very much for having me.
This is Donna Sebo, the book Habit, the 95% of Behavior Marketers Ignore. And as a consumer, it will give you an insight into yourself. If you're a business person, it will help you understand how you can make your business even more successful. Neil Martin, the book Habit, the 95% of Behavior Marketers Ignore. We're going to take a break. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on BBSRadio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast, with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Intuitive insight, that is. Give me a buzz at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, it's 888-815-5227. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. And all I need from you, by the way, if you're a first-time listener, so glad you're able to join us, but if you, when you call in, just remember, I want your first name or your initial. Then after that, I almost forgot. I always like to know where you're calling from. Then let me do my insights, and you are welcome then to ask me a question about anything you desire. Let's take a look at the people that are going to be coming up this week. We are going to be talking tomorrow with Corrick Ashley in New Zealand, and his book is called How Would Love Respond? Interesting question, isn't it? How would love respond? Well, Corrick has walked a road of interesting life experiences, and he has some interesting stories to tell. So we'll be talking with him, and on Friday we'll be talking about healing, meaning, and purpose. Yes, Dr. Petty is going to be my guest this Friday, and I know you will enjoy it. By the way, I want to mention, Dr. Petty has a website, richardgpettymd.com, and he has a blog there. It's the number 31 in the world for medical information. So we're going to be sharing a lot of good things with you on Friday, so do tune in. Okay, let's go to our first caller today. Welcome to the show. First name or initial? Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Lisa. I'm calling from Michigan.
Where in Michigan, dear?
Commerce Township.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, and let's see what I get for you. First of all, dear, stop worrying about family and friends so much. I just think you are such a caretaker on so many different levels, and you internalize so much of what is occurring with other people that it can be rather suffocating if you're not careful. And I'm watching you evolving through a level of thought and, I'll say, analysis. And you're wanting to become a little reflective because you feel as if you're getting burned out. And there's that feeling of emptiness, you know, sometimes in front, within you. And I look at this and I want to say, appreciate that emptiness. Because when you have that, I know it's better to feel full and bubbly, but sometimes you have to have that emptiness because you want something new to come into your emotional, mental, spiritual, physical space, and you can't have it unless you make space for it. So you're evolving here over the next 3 to 4 weeks, especially, thoughtfully. You are really trying to become familiar with the shifts and changes that are occurring within you that are causing this, I'll call it, emptiness. And when you're ready, you're going to know what you want to fill that emptiness with. Fortunately, you're not 16 years old. If you were 16, just like most teenagers, you'd say, I'll take anything I can get. But as a mature adult, you're saying, I want to be very thoughtful about this. There's something going on. I don't quite understand what it is. Well, you're growing into what I would describe as a greater you, a you that is understanding yourself for the purpose of bringing your own good and wellness and benefit of the best into your environment of self. This is so important for you. It is so important for you. Be patient. Allow that this is enabling you to make some steps forward, both in education, in decision-making for yourself as an individual. And little by little, that sense of emptiness is going to go away because you're going to be filling yourself up with the right kinds of plans, the right kind of emotions. And that's all healthy. And it's not just on one level. It's on multiple levels. I would like to rephrase it a little bit myself by saying you are resculpting yourself in your life. And that takes time, hon. There are no shortcuts here. There's no easy add water mix and you got it. It doesn't work that way. This is a process. It's taking you a long time to get to this point of openness and awareness. So allow yourself the time to determine how you want to take care of the sense of emptiness within you. By the way, this knee that you have a problem with every once in a while, if there's a popping, sort of a sensation of it slipping, if you do the right kind of exercises, and a physical therapist could tell you what you could do, you'll build your muscles up so you won't have that sense of something popping and slipping inside the knee. It has to do with weak muscles. So exercise is very important to you, but you need to be able to do the right kind that's going to empower those muscles to maintain their strength and stamina. What would you like to ask me about today?
Well, it's funny that you were saying all that you were saying, because a lot of probably what I'm going to ask you pertains to me.
All right, what's your question, dear?
Well, what I was wondering about is I haven't spoke to a friend in a few weeks, and I discovered some things that were truths. I spoke it up, and I put it in the truth. And now I just wonder, will we still be friends, or do you see us going in different directions?
I think what you have discovered has been very healthy. I think it's good that you brought the truth out. I think there will be an opportunity for you to have a conversation with your friend. But the situation has changed because in your mind there's been a violation of trust. But actually what has, in my mind, occurred is that you have sensed this for a long time. And until you had the courage to speak the truth, to determine what was real and what was not, there were all of these assumptions and apprehensions. When you spoke the truth, when you brought the truth to the forefront, that created a whole different relationship. There was no longer the assumptions. There were no longer the make-believes. That changed the relationship between you substantially. And so consequently, you're the one that has changed more than your friend. And I don't see it going back to the way it was before, but I believe you still will have an open communication. But realize that your friend may be very uncomfortable because of your candor. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
I think that you have grown into a different part of yourself where your friend may not fit in the picture as before.
Okay.
And that's not good and it's not bad. I think of a lady that I know that had a very, very close friendship with someone for, oh my goodness, it was 20 years. And the lifestyle changed. This one person moved to another state. And they got together about 5 years after they went their separate ways, so to speak, in locale. And the one woman said, I could not believe the difference in this friend that I had been so close to for 20 years. I had grown into such a different direction, and yet the friend would say, I wish we could go back and have everything the way that it was before. And this person said, I couldn't take that. I just couldn't take that in the conversation over and over again because my world had changed and had moved forward. This person's world would never change or move forward because they didn't want it to change. So there really wasn't that compatibility in conversation. And occasionally they will be in touch, but it's extremely infrequent.
So we will talk, but not very much. Is that what you're saying?
I think you need to be prepared for the fact that you have a new space for other people in your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not good and it's not bad. You don't need to resent your friend. You don't need to hate your friend. You just need to understand what's going on, dear. You are growing up and into a whole new person.
Yeah, I believe that. I appreciate you talking to me today.
Oh, you're more than welcome. That's my pleasure.
Okay, take care now.
I will,
and
you have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo, and if you want to give me a buzz, here are the phone numbers to call in to 877-876-4444. 888-815-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment. Don't you go anywhere now.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. Also, 530-876-3222. Just the other day, after I got back from my business trip back east, I was chatting with you and telling you about these huge, huge thunderclouds that we saw when we were over 30,000 feet up in the air. And, of course, all of this turbulent weather that was going on underneath the clouds that seemed to just go on forever and ever. Well, there was an article I came across that I thought I would share with you because it is intriguing, to say the least. In today's world with GPS, we have, my goodness, I think there's like 4,000 satellites that are circling the globe at this time. So we're able to access all kinds of information regarding the weather. Well, no matter how much we access it, we're always going to be surprised. Mother Nature has a way of having what I call a PMS attacks periodically that really make us realize we don't control everything. And it is fascinating how weather does its stuff. Now, Joshua Werman, who is the president of the Center for Severe Weather Research in Boulder, Colorado, was asked a question. Actually, he was asked two questions. One, why don't tornadoes hit cities more often? Two, could global warming make this event occur more frequently? Now, he said, we have a glib answer for a while. Tornadoes rarely strike urban areas. And he said, this is it. Cities are small. And he said, when you look at Google Maps, the portion of the United States covered by urban and suburban areas is pretty minute. And that was a perspective that I didn't think of. Whenever I see a picture of the United States from outer space, it just seems like almost every inch of the place is lit up with light. But it isn't, in truth. In the regions with the peak tornado frequencies, from Texas up through Kansas and even out to the southeast, are fairly open country. Well, it's said that it's very unusual that a tornado encounters a city, as happened in Atlanta this past March. When it does happen, the storm doesn't have to be particularly strong to cause a lot of trouble. Now, tornadoes are rated 0 to 5 on the enhanced Fujita, the EF scale. Violent tornadoes are classified EF4 and EF5, significant ones EF2 and EF3. Now, the tornado that went through Atlanta, which was rated an EF2, didn't destroy downtown structures, but it did cause one death, and it obviously caused millions of dollars worth of damages. Now, the second question that Joshua was asked, one could be confident that global temperature is going to rise. Now, everything seems to be heating up, by all appearances. Now, the effect of local temperature on tornado formation, we really don't know much about, he said. Brazil is quite hot, but does not have a lot of tornadoes. Oklahoma and Texas are very hot in the summer, but those states see the most tornadoes in spring. So it is possible the climate change could shift the timing of the tornado season up. As spring creeps into winter, perhaps it will affect the geographic distribution of stronger tornadoes. But as for whether global warming will increase the number of tornadoes, making for more urban touchdowns, we'll find out soon enough. Well, I have to tell you, when we were back in the state of Virginia, and this is just in the last 2 weeks, I was talking with my sister-in-law, who lives in Walters, and she said, we had a tornado go right over our house. She said, I've never been so frightened in my life. Here in the state of Washington, we have had tornadoes. In fact, I was up in Spokane when 3 tornadoes hit up in Spokane. Unheard of. So there's so much we don't know about weather and the various systems. And we're going to continue to learn about it. But I think Joshua gave some fairly good answers there, but I don't know that they are answers. All we know is that there is a shift. There are associations with temperature. We have volcanic activity that's going on underneath the Earth's crust, creating new islands, new areas of hot water. It's just amazing. You don't often hear too much about that. There is a shift. There's definitely a change that's evolving. And whether I'll see the totality of that in my lifetime, I don't know. All I know is that nature is a supreme example of how nothing stays still. Change is one of the absolutes in life. It is just something that happens. So the key is to be prepared, the Girl Scout, Boy Scout model, be prepared. That is all that we need to remember, and we'll get through it all one way or the other. We human beings are so resilient, it's absolutely amazing. Adaptations are the name of the game. We all know that that's a reality, and you know what? Many times when things change, let's take a look at the gasoline situation. You can grumble about it and moan and groan about it, but really, this is something that is forcing change on multiple levels. There already has been the technology for many, many, many years to not use oil at all. We don't have to have it. But when things become a habit, going back to what our guests talked about earlier, when we get into a habit patterning, why do we want to change it? We don't. This is something we do. So necessity, the old saying, necessity is the mother of invention, is very, very true. And that is causing us to really wake up and say, okay, it's time for a shift. So all of you inventors out there, get hustling, because now is just as good a time as any to bring forth new ideas, new concepts. And in our world today, that can be pretty significant. But you also, again, have to know how to get the word out there so people know what you've got going. Okay, I wanted to give the next quarter... for the year 2008, Cancer, Leo, and Virgo. I've been sharing so-called astrological information for the different signs. So now we've got 6 down, and we've got 6 more to go, so I'm going to give you information on 3 today. For those of you born under the sign of Cancer, well, your intuition is going to be working overtime. You're naturally endowed anyhow, and you are going to find that you really are picking up on so many things. So pay attention to what is happening in your life. Pay attention to what it is your dreams are. Let your intuition give you its feedback. July, for those of you under the sign of Cancer, you are going to want to party. Of course, I think you always have been a party person anyway. You like people, you like get-togethers, and this is a great opportunity. If you're wanting to check into a business, if you want to research about being an entrepreneur, this is a good time to do it. But remember, don't put yourself into a situation too quickly. Do your homework first. And for the month of August, your economic status, if you are wise with your money, is going to go up. and you possibly might have another source of income available for yourself. That extra cash, sock it away. You're going to need it on one level or another. So know that you're going to be able to increase your financial picture, but be prudent with it. Those of you under the sign of Leo, well, you're going to have a wonderful social life in June. Yes, and after that, you're going to have some R&R, because you're going to be really working hard on thinking and taking care of yourself. In fact, the month of July, you are really going to spend time on yourself for wellness. You could meet somebody new, maybe even adopt a pet. And in August, you're breaking out of a rut, and romance is going to touch your life in a special way. We are out of time. My goodness, it just whips by. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We'll be chatting tomorrow, same team, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.